WATD presents Monday Night Talk with your host, Kevin Tachi.
If it's Monday night, it's got to be Monday Night Talk with Kevin Tachi. So thanks for having me on.
Kevin, good for you to hold back and let him tell his story.
Putting the South Shore spin on politics, current events, and pop culture.
You guys are the center of the universe today, at least the political universe.
I believe both of you are from the area. Marshfield guys, yes, no?
Correct, yeah.
That's right.
There's only one person not from Marshfield in this room right now. And it's you.
It's me. I'm the outcast.
Well, you've always been generous with the time. I appreciate it very much.
Well, I'm honored to be on your show tonight, Kevin, with that impressive lineup you have.
I believe our guest that we've been waiting for, Congressman Stephen Lynch.
Kevin, good to join you.
The governor of the Commonwealth, Charlie Baker. You ready?
I got to tell you that it's really nice to hear Aerosmith on the intro there.
You're going
to
be the rock and roll governor?
I don't know about that, but...
We have Mayor Joe Sullivan joining us. Sir, how are you?
Well, Kevin, very good to be with you again.
Dr. Drew Pinsky. Dr. Drew, are you there?
I'm here. Thanks for having me.
Mr. Ming Tsai, welcome to the show, sir.
Hey, thanks, Kevin.
Massachusetts State Auditor Suzanne Bump. Hello, Auditor. How are you?
I am fine, and I'm delighted to be with you this evening.
And now, your host, Kevin Tachi.
Welcome, one and all, to yet another Monday Night Talk. My name is Kevin Tachi. And I will be your host for the program. I've been sitting behind this microphone. I don't know if it's been the very microphone for all 10 years, but I've been proud to be able to be at the helm of this radio program. And the number of guests, I've lost count as to how many people have sat down to talk about a variety of topics, whether it's a hot button issue, something going on in a particular community, just to share information about, you know, a certain topic. Great conversations tonight, starting with Congressman Stephen Lynch serving the Massachusetts 8th Congressional District. And we're going to get a chance to speak with the congressman about the events of last week and his thoughts on what happens moving forward. Yes, we're going to be less than 10, we're going to have 10 days, we're going to be swearing in, less than 10 days, swearing in a new president, ushering in a new, hopefully a new age with a new administration, get his take on it, see what he thinks about that. Might even ask him about Marty Walsh, knowing that he and Marty, both blue-collar guys, seeing Marty getting named a labor secretary last week as well, get his take on that. And then how can I sit here and talk about being at the helm for 10 years without having the original host of Monday Night Talk, one-time state senator, now Weymouth mayor, Bob Hedlund joins us. We'll check in with Bob and get his take on what's going on in and around the community that he serves so proudly. Get his take on local and national politics. Bob always was never one who was afraid to share his thoughts and opinions on things that are going on. I look forward to that. That's going to be a good, healthy conversation. Hour number two is more information for you, depending on what demographic or where you are financially. We're going to have Tammy Murray, who is the Community and Elder Services Director, as well as Susan Curtin, who is the COA Director in Norwell. And we're going to get a take on how they have endured COVID for nearly the past year and get their take on the vaccines and, you know, what their understanding is as to the distribution and how our older adults in our population, when they're going to be the ones who are most susceptible to catch COVID and possibly suffer from a fatality. We'll look forward to talking to them about that. And then we'll wrap things up with Paula Harris. Paula's a good friend, but Paula, it's fantastic when it comes to finances, and we're going to talk with her about financial preparedness. Are you financially prepared? How do things stand? And again, if you don't know it, Paula is with a WH Cornerstone Investment, so we look forward to talking with her. But right now, time for us to step aside just for a moment and find out what's happening one final time. Out on the roadways, being brought to you by Brennan Smoke Shop, online at BrennanSmokeShopMA.com. We have locations in Plymouth, Pembroke, Brockton, Wareham, Raynham, Taunton, Stoughton, New Bedford, and Weymouth.
Well, thanks, Kevin. The expressway southbound's good from top to bottom. It's about 11 minutes there. Northbound's an easy drive from Braintree to Boston. Routes 3 South and 24 South are in good shape to 495. And 93 is delay-free in either direction between Braintree and Canton. This report is sponsored by the Crohn's and Colitis Foundation. The Crohn's and Colitis Foundation has been at the forefront of inflammatory bowel disease research and care for over 50 years. Learn more about research, education, and support at Crohn'sColitisFoundation.org. Traffic on the nines every morning. I'm Lisa DeMilo in the WATD Traffic Center.
I'm amazed at the number of you here in the Commonwealth that aren't aware of the tobacco flavor ban. All flavored vape and tobacco products are banned from being sold here in Massachusetts, including menthol. It's okay. You can always go to New Hampshire or stop by one of our 9 locations and pick up some flavored CBD hemp wraps. Grape, pineapple, watermelon, strawberry. That's right, we have a huge selection of full-spectrum CBD hemp wraps. It's just another example of our American ingenuity. Oh, and a very special thank you to Speaker of the House Robert DeLeo for 30 years on Beacon Hill. May your greatest achievement be sending billions of Massachusetts taxpayer dollars to New Hampshire. Billions of dollars for their infrastructure, their roads, their police and firefighters, etc., etc.,
etc., etc. Help them, etc., etc.
Brennan Smoke Shop, Plymouth, Pembroke, Brockton, Wareham, Raynham, Taunton, Stoughton, New Bedford, and now on Bridge Street in North Weymouth. Brennan Smoke Shop, the best smoke shop in Massachusetts. Flavored CBD hemp wraps, dudes.
Download previous episodes of Monday Night Talk and listen to them anywhere. Check out 959watd.com/Monday Night Talk. And now, more Monday Night Talk with your host, Kevin Tachi.
We return for another segment of Monday Night Talk, and joining us, the original host of Monday Night Talk, also one-time state senator, now mayor of the great town of Weymouth, Bob Hedlund. Mayor, how are you?
I'm having an awesome day, Kev. How are you doing?
You are so full of it. You know what? You must be pulling it. Do you still have hair in your head?
It's thinning out.
How are things?
People ask me if I color my hair. I'm getting a little gray in my beard, but my hair is still dark. There's no gray, but I think I'm having the opposite effect of instead of graying, I'm losing it from the job. I don't know.
Well, it hasn't, you know, a lot of people are kind of going through that since, you know, we're going into 1 year of enduring a pandemic. Here we are, you know, the first of the year. How has Weymouth endured this pandemic?
I mean, we've endured it, I guess, like every other community, you know, we've had our ups and downs, obviously an impact to our budget, you know, with a drop off in local receipts through meals taxes and things like that. The uncertainty of state aid. But we've, you know, coped fairly well. We limped across the finish line in the last fiscal year, budget-wise. This year, you know, there's that uncertainty, so we'll see how that plays out. I will say this, Kev, one of the things that's actually helped us is the partnership we have with Social Hospital, Social Health Systems. That's been helpful in a whole number of ways. Most recently, opening up a testing site with them helping us to really take the lead in operating it.
I want to start economic development. I mean, I would think that COVID-19 would put a placeholder until we're able to get out and about in a normal basis. Has that affected economic development in the town?
I mean, it's affected, as I said, local receipts, restaurant, you know, impacted restaurants, so our meals tax is down, things like that. But in terms of real estate development, no. I mean, things are pretty much on fire here, no pun intended, knock on wood. You know, there's multiple projects underway in Weymouth Landing that are exciting. The result of some rezoning we did, creating an overlay on three of our commercial corridors, actually three, and then to a lesser degree a fourth. We're actually kind of turning away developers right now. We're sort of overwhelmed with the response. So I would say no, it hasn't impacted real estate development. The real estate market's extremely, extremely hot in Weymouth, as it is, you know, in the region. Home prices are up through the roof. Median home values here in town are going up significantly, and the commercial and residential development pace is huge right now.
I don't want to tear you away from talking about Weymouth and some of the great things that are going on, but in a moment I want to get your take on a couple of things that are happening nationally, things that are good, things that you prided yourself on talking about 10 years ago when you because, again, you were somebody who was, it didn't matter what party you were affiliated with, you saw the right and the wrong and were able to kind of call things out.
Yeah, the last 5 years my focus has been a little more narrow, but go ahead.
Before we segue into that, looking ahead to 2021, what do you feel are going to be some of the hallmark things that you and the community leaders are going to kind of focus on, other than making sure that you get your fair share when it comes to the state budget?
Well, first and foremost, I mean, obviously, a hope that there's a return to normalcy. You know, I mean, kids back in school and me and you being able to go see live music and people going out into restaurants and that kind of economic activity. We have more localized issues here in town. You know, we're just opened up our library. We're underway. Well, and we're probably about pushing 20% on our construction timeline for a new middle school. So we've got a lot of, ongoing projects like that, that we want to focus on. That's more, you know, more local, but you know, the big picture stuff, really, hopefully, some semblance of normal returning to our country.
Yeah, somebody who is big on civics and you know, understanding the trickle down from what happens on the national level to how it affects our state. The events of last week, as far as certifying the Electoral College and making it so that President-elect Joe Biden would be, you know, would be so come swearing in on the 20th. Give me your thoughts on the events that took place, the, you know, individuals going down and protesting that and the events of what happened last week.
Well, I mean, it's obviously frustrating to watch. I mean, whether it's this absurd chaos that went on yesterday, or this past week, I should say, continuing, you know, forward, and just everything we've seen with protests around the country and a lack of respect for property and this just lawlessness that seems to be taking hold and you know, the normalizing this kind of behavior, it seems like, is a big problem for our country. And I think we need to do something about it. In terms of election integrity, you know, I've gone through, you know, 2+ decades of elections myself, and you want to see integrity in our system. I mean, we've really been kind of the beacon, you know, for democracy in the world over the last couple hundred plus years, and to see it kind of integrity questioned or even a loss of integrity, I do have concerns from my days, you know, as a candidate and knowing the process pretty well about some of the lessening of safeguards with the way we've loosened up ballot access. It's great to try to get turnout up, but I do have a lot of questions about mail-in ballots. I mean, one of the last major election reform overhauls we did, probably the next to last one we did in the legislature, I was on the conference committee. And, you know, we had a lot of input from town clerks who registered a lot of concerns about maintaining that integrity and the safeguards that should be in place, which, you know, the legislature didn't look at. And that was even before this pandemic, which was a rationale to even loosen things up even further. So I think that's something that should be looked at. And I'm not saying in a partisan way. I'm saying that, you know, depending upon the state, depending upon the circumstances, there could be, you know, elements in either party that could be manipulating the electoral process, and I think that needs to be looked at.
If you're just tuning in, we're speaking with Weymouth Mayor Bob Hedlund as he joins us, so one of our first guests of 2021. You know, I know you're somebody who is very active on social media, as was our outgoing president. Do you feel that our biggest problem in this country right now isn't necessarily the politics that are taking place down in Washington or at Beacon Hill, but the politics that are taking place and how people are abusing social media and how that's becoming more, if anything, a fire starter?
I think it's a combination of a lot. I mean, you know, we used to read the same newspapers. You know, you'd open up the newspaper and you'd get news and you'd go to opinion, get opinion. You'd read a conservative columnist. You'd read on the opposite page a liberal columnist. You know, you'd turn Crossfire on, you know, and see Pat Buchanan and Tom Braden. Complete ideological opposites, but they were friends. Now it's, I must hate my political opponents, and the division is sown. Social media creates that divide, but even worse, people go to the media sources that they agree with. You don't get two sides anymore. Sometimes in certain learning institutions, you don't get two sides anymore. Things are just kind of lopsided one way or the other, and you turn on some of our alleged news stations, and they're whether some on the right and some on the left, it's just more propaganda than it is news, and it's just creating a bigger divide amongst us, and that's a huge problem. I don't see it getting any better anytime soon, and I think it portends real bad things for our country down the road.
If you look at this incoming administration with Biden and Harris, do you feel that they can somehow try to put things on the right path to normalcy and kind of toning down the rhetoric that we hear from our elected leaders, especially down in D.C.?
It's a great question, and I don't have the answer to that. I know that Biden's been around a long time. And, you know, his tenure in the Senate goes back to a time when things were more civil. Yeah. When you had differing of opinions, but, you know, that the Tip O'Neill and Ronald Reagan could get together for a card game after or a drink or something, and they could work things out. There was compromise, but it has become very divisive down there. And while he may, you know, be a creature of those days and understand those days, and I think he does, you know, you hear him talk about it, and he's hopeful that he can kind of try to move things in that direction. You know, he's being pulled in another direction. And I don't know if he can counter that. I mean, his generation is leaving us, and this new generation, they'd rather fight than compromise.
I'll ask you. I'm gonna you know, take you back in the time machine. But you're somebody who also pays attention to local politics. How has our state officials, whether it's our governor, the folks in the legislature, whether it's the Senate or in the House of Rep, how have they been able to work together? Even though we have a lopsided imbalance with one party that kind of dominates the legislature, how is it that our state officials are able to get along and not take a page out of what's going on down in D.C. and replicate the rhetoric that we hear constantly, you know, whether it's on social media or on our local our daily news?
Yeah, I think it's changing in our legislature, too, not as drastically. You know, I did a long stint there and was an observer of how things went prior to my arrival. But, you know, when you have a 37-3 or a 36-4 advantage, it's easy to say that you're collegial because you can do whatever you want, get your way on everything. but no, it really generally was that way. I like to talk about this because you go back when I first arrived, Bill Bulger was still the Senate president. He was demonized. I mean, he was a campaign issue for me. But as I spent more time in the Senate and dealt with future Senate presidents, you know, it really was a time when someone like Bulger at that time had an institutional knowledge of how things worked, had a respect for the institution, and viewed colleagues as equals. And let people have a fair hearing. You know, we adhere to rules. You know, there was occasionally manipulation of the rules, yes, but it was a different time, and that's drifted away, and it's just different. It's people are more inflamed or passionate about things, and much, much more partisan, and that's bad.
You miss those days of caucusing in a phone booth?
Well, when I went there, I mean, we had 16 out of 40, so yeah. we were cramped, but we weren't in a phone booth in those days. I mean, we had a significant number, and you know, watched it dwindle through the years. But you know, people look to, obviously the results in Georgia didn't demonstrate this, but I think sometimes people, you know, want to have a little balance in government to provide some safeguards, which is why Republican governors have had success in recent years in Massachusetts to serve as a, you know, counterbalance to the legislature, because it is so one party dominated. And if you look at the national results this past year, you'll see a lot of evidence of ticket splitting, not as much maybe in the past, but it still exists. You know, you look at Maine, for instance, and Susan Collins being outspent significantly and Biden carrying the state, yet her winning comfortably, and some of the results where Biden carried districts, yet people voted for Republican reps and Republicans gained in Congress. So it's, there's still evidence of that out there, but it does seem to be diminishing.
Okay. Again, if you're just tuning in, we're getting ready to wrap up with Mayor Bob Hedlund. The fun thing, I want to have one little seed planter commentary from you. The friendly conversation back and forth with yourself and the rock and roll governor, Charlie Baker, in regards to greatest rock and roll album or greatest rock and roll live album. That's been ongoing online between you and him.
Well, I'm a big music guy, as folks who maybe listened back in the day when I was on the show 10 years ago would know. That was actually what got me at the station in the first place, was music, as you recall, prior to that. But yeah, I noticed I'm on a UFO, which is a band no one knows, fan page, and they recognize the anniversary date, 42 years of the release of a live album called Strangers in the Night. And many of the many magazines and other pundits really rate it very high in the annals of rock and roll in terms of, you know, a true live album, no overdubs, the rawness of it, the great production of it. And it caught that band at their peak, and it's one of those, you know, cliches, a band that should have been bigger than they were. But it really is a great album. I mean, it comes in the top five of just about most, you know, hard rock ratings or rock ratings. And I noted that anniversary because there was a cute little meme thing about it, and I put that up, and it's kind of cool. The governor weighed in on it and took issue with what I had written, and he was touting some early AC/DC live album, and that led to a little bit of a debate with some people and him. So that was fun. But he's wrong.
See, and I'm hoping that us bringing this up, that maybe we could find a way to have you and the governor somehow participate in a segment here on Monday Night Talk, and let this be the place to air out the discussion. And I believe Dave Wedge, a friend of ours, now best-selling author, as we knew him as you know, someone who wrote for the Boston Scribe, the Herald, did a fantastic job, is willing to kind of be a moderator amongst with myself. You're going to find a way to get the governor on with you.
Yeah, I mean, I'm coming into that as an underdog, because, you know, it evolves into a popularity contest. Everyone knows AC/DC. I mean, they put an album out and they sell millions. Nobody knows UFO. So, you know, I've got a really uphill battle to try to win that. I mean, how am I going to win that?
I don't know, though. You have a way with words. You had made some quote about if you omitted certain words, that how would AC/DC have been able to name some of their songs and albums? Am I correct?
Oh, well, it was funny because I got a little album of music stuff related to shows I went to on my Facebook page. It's not public, but I could let you in. And I saw AC/DC. It was really cool. I saw AC/DC at the Garden in 2009. A friend of mine was the lighting director. I actually got to watch the show down on the floor in Angus Young's wife or girlfriend's reclining high back leather chair that was in the production area, which was really cool. And I got the set list from the lighting director after. And I went back and looked at it, and I'm like, you know, there's a real formula that AC/DC has. You know, limited chords, the lyrics are kind of all out of the same genre. And I looked at that set list, and I said, if you took the words hell, black, and rock out of their vocabulary, it would eliminate almost half the songs that were on this set list that night. So when they do, when I say they stick to a narrow formula, they really do. Everything's about rock or sexual innuendo.
Yeah, we'll have to figure out a way to get the governor on and see if you guys can expand the conversation to another media other than medium other than social media.
Hey, if I cause one listener to go on YouTube and check out UFO, my work is done here.
There it is. Well, Mayor, I want to thank you very much for your time. As always, I know you're busy with a lot of the things that are going on in your community, and your time is always appreciated.
We appreciate it. I love coming on the show, and hope to be back soon.
Right. There he is, Mayor Bob Hedlund, an original host of Monday Night Talk. We're going to step aside, and when we come back, I promise, more Monday Night Talk here on 95.9 WATD.
Hey, it's John Shea here from Almost Famous Radio, introducing you to independent bands and musicians from across New England, brought to you by Tiny and Sons Glass. So tomorrow night, we have another jam-packed show in store for you with some new music, a few upcoming shows to let you know about, and we'll be joined on the Tiny stage by Scituate singer-songwriter Sam Luke Chase. That's tomorrow, 8 to 10 right here on 95.9 WATD and 95.9WATD.com.
Dad, you know I'm willing to drive.
Honey, we're all set here.
But your eyes, you even say so yourself, don't like driving at night.
Well, that's why I'm following the plow.
But that's a sander, Dad. You know what they say.
It pays to stay way back.
It pays to stay way back.
Oh!
Too late.
I'm Peter Brown of Tiny and Sons Auto Glass in Pembroke. It pays to stay way back. However, if your windshield is broken, just call 1-888-64-TINYS. And thank you.
Hi, I'm Greg from Veterans Voice Radio and WATD. Join us on Thursday, January 14th for a drive-through food giveaway for veterans and active service members. It's happening right here in the WATD parking lot at 130 Enterprise Drive in Marshfield from noon to 2 p.m. Everything will be COVID safe and social distancing will be practiced. Just drive in. Your car will be loaded by a Veterans Voice team member and you'll be on your way. For more information, go to 959WATD.com.
Monday Night Talk continues all week long. Go to 959WATD.com/Monday Night Talk and keep in touch on Facebook and Twitter. This is Monday Night Talk with your host, Kevin Tachi.
Joining us is Congressman Stephen Lynch, representing the Massachusetts 8th Congressional District. Congressman, it's been a while since we've chatted, but how are you doing?
I'm doing well, thank you. I'm home, came home yesterday, but it's good to be home and good to be with you, Kevin.
Excellent. You know, many, many of us, and I'm including yourself, I'm sure, are hoping that the new year would bring change. Does it feel that way to you? That we've sent change, now it's 2021?
It started off with a bang, you know, and so I think this is a little bit of a hangover from 2020. So I think maybe when the new president gets sworn in, that'll really begin the new year as well as the new administration.
Yeah, we had some real surreal events that unfolded on January 6th. This is while Congress was tallying the electoral college votes. Many Americans are upset by what they witnessed, the chaos from afar. But you were there. Where in the building were you when this all unfolded?
I was at the Capitol complex. So yeah, I had meetings there early in the morning at the Capitol. And then several of the buildings that the Russell building in particular, that was the one I was at when the big surge came. I was required to shelter in place at my house, which is I have a little studio apartment about a block and a half away from the Capitol. And that was sort of away from where the crowd was surging up the hill. So we had police protection around the building, and I just had to wait until the events transpired.
If I may ask you, as an elected official, what was it like to experience something like this? To me, it appeared to be a near coup, per se.
Yeah, it was very, very strange, bizarre. You know, I spent a lot of time in other countries like Iraq, Afghanistan, Yemen, Pakistan, where, you know, every election, the losing candidate says it was rigged. And so they undermine the party that won. They undermine their democracy. They undermine the government, and they create real distrust in the population. That's sort of what happened here. This is exactly what President Trump was intending to do. You got to remember that we were just counting the votes that were being brought from the states. And Mike Pence's responsibility was just to open up the envelopes and read the certified results that were sent to Washington, sent to Congress from those states by the governors and legislators of those states. In every case on the challenge states, those cases also went to the courts, the federal courts. And based on the decisions of Republican-appointed judges in 60 different cases across those six states, it was determined that there was no fraud, that the cases were dismissed for lack of evidence. And yet President Trump kept spinning this bogus story that there was a fraudulent election. And what was really incredible is that Republican legislators who were on the ballot with Trump, that ballot, and were elected from their states on that ballot, they were spinning the story that the ballots that they were elected to Congress on were fraudulent, that those elections were fraudulent. It's tough to get your head around that, but it was just disgraceful. I am very glad that McConnell and Pelosi and Schumer and McCarthy all agreed that we needed to go back in to session after the National Guard and the FBI and the ATF did a very, very good job. Several hundred of them went in and cleared out the these domestic terrorists from the building to allow us to go back in and complete our job. So we finished up around 4 a.m, but we did our work. And so I'm very glad about that. It showed the American people that their votes will be counted and also that their democracy was alive and well. But we've got a lot of work to do. I still think we need to impeach this president. I still think that the 25th Amendment is a viable option. I still think that, seditious conspiracy, there are elements there that the president could be charged with. And I'd like to get started on that as soon as possible.
Is there enough time in order to be able to take such action? And if you did impeach President Trump, what ramifications would this prevent this outgoing president from seeking to be reelected or elected again in 2024?
Well, ultimately, it'll depend on the cooperation of the Senate. So the 25th Amendment requires the cooperation of the vice president. He has to either offer the petition or support it. And again, even though there's part of this impeachment process that occurs in the state and in the House, it also requires cooperation on the part of the Senate. And that remains to be decided. The seditious conspiracy issue can be pursued beyond the 20th. So and that's a more involved analysis, and we're still gathering evidence on that. But I think it's more important to put a marker down to demonstrate that what the president did, sending a crowd, first of all, spreading the lies about the election when he knew it was false, and then sending the crowd up to interfere with the constitutional duty of Congress to certify the Electoral College, taking out the legislative branch of government was truly seditious, and he needs to be held accountable. That was disgraceful. Think of all the wars that have been fought, the people who have died throughout our history to defend our democracy, and this guy, he decides that it's in his best interest to undo all that. Very, very, very troubling. Very troubling. And it's equally troubling that he had so much support, that people set aside their own love of their country to destroy our democracy. It's really bizarre. It just shows you how fragile our democracy is. But, you know, I'm very proud of being able to play a role to defend our democracy, defend the republic, defend the idea that the framers had when they established this country, that we are a nation of laws and not of men. So, but the work continues. And I'm extremely honored to be able to serve, even in these difficult times. It's been an honor and a privilege for me to serve.
Yeah, if you are just tuning in, we're speaking with the Congressman Stephen Lynch. He is our guest here for this segment. Looking ahead in around 10 days, we'll see a new president sworn in. This always, you know, regardless of what the election and what everything, what the buildup was towards the general election, there's always a sense of renewal and hope with each inauguration. Do we still feel that way with Joe Biden getting ready to be sworn in with his vice president, Kamala Harris?
Probably more so, right? It'll be a return to the rule of law. And I've known Joe for many years, President Biden for many years. He is one of those bipartisan members that has worked very well. He's got great friendships in the Senate among the Republicans as well as Democrats. And he always has been bipartisan. I think one of his first steps will be try to get the transportation bill done, which will be very important for Abington and all the towns along the coast in my district. I'm on the Water and Environment Committee on transportation. So we're trying to address climate change all the towns along the waterfront from Boston all the way down to Scituate in my district. So, you know, I'm on the Aviation Committee and the Pipelines and Hatteras Materials Committees. So if that bill goes forward, you know, I think there'll be a wonderful opportunity for us to help the cities and towns in my district with the resources they need. We'll put a lot of people to work, but I think most importantly, it'll give an opportunity for Democrats and Republicans to work together. We've already done one version of the bill, and we made sure that it was chock full of initiatives that the Republicans wanted, because we want to build that bipartisan consensus around, you know, strengthening the United States infrastructure and transportation systems. We've got stuff in there such as broadband access for rural, mostly red states, as well as, you know, green infrastructure and green technology to address the climate change issues that are affecting every community in America and the world. So, you know, I'm very optimistic in that regard. And Joe is a very different person than Donald Trump. So, and I'm really happy about that.
But let's not undersell the fact that you're also going to be starting a new term, being sworn into a new term. What are some of the items that need to be addressed in the first 100 days, for things that you're looking forward to getting down to work? You haven't already been working on it, you know, relatively shortly.
So we'll have a good chance to take a good hard whack at this coronavirus, the pandemic. We've not done a good job on that in any respect. This vaccine rollout has been a mess. The PPE production has been a mess. I think that President Biden sees that as a major initiative for him coming out of the gate. I talked about the transportation bill. That will probably be the first up in terms of the president's agenda. So I'll be deeply involved in all of that and happy to, you know, be a part of that. You know, we've got a lot going on in the world. I chair the subcommittee on national security. So we've got the situation in Afghanistan. We've got the situation in Iraq, Yemen, Somalia. I was there somewhat recently. And so we've got a lot of flashpoints around the world that we're very, very concerned about, as well as, you know, healing the country as well internally, you know, between Republicans and Democrats, and try to get us back on the same page so that we can move forward together.
Yeah, it's funny. I liked how you transitioned from domestically to the foreign, because I feel as though with a new administration coming in, it's going to give us an opportunity to rebuild and maybe take a look at some of the treaties that
the outgoing administration pulled out of, and try to get us back into better standings with a lot of the global leaders, which we have been accustomed to working with. It seems as though we've taken a pause on that over the past 4 years. Would you not agree?
Absolutely. So many of the foreign leaders that I speak to are puzzled or offended at the hostile position of this administration. And I'm not just talking about the Middle East and Africa. I'm talking about Canada.
Yeah.
I'm talking about Great Britain. I'm talking about Germany. You know, these are allies. These are democracies that we've been working with forever. And you know, it seems like this president wanted to cozy up to Kim Jong-un in North Korea and Putin. I just don't get it. So we've got to rebuild those relationships and get us on a better path. I think it was Churchill who said the only thing worse than fighting with your allies is fighting without them. And, you know, that's sort of the position we find ourselves in today.
And with President-elect Biden coming into office, he's already been naming folks to take over certain cabinets. A good friend of yours, Marty Wolf, being named Labor Secretary. Give me your thoughts on that.
So I had a chance to talk with Marty as soon as I found out that he had been appointed. I got a call from the Capitol, and I called him right away and congratulated him. And, you know, I'm just so proud of him. You know, Marty and I, just to be clear, we strapped on the work boots together. Marty was a laborer, Local 223, and I was an iron worker with Local 7. Marty became the business manager his union, business agent, and then the general agent, and I became the president of the Iron Workers Union. So we go back a long ways. Because of the cyclical nature of the construction industry, ironically, Marty and I have found ourselves in the unemployment line at the same time. And how wonderful is it that not only do we have somebody who strapped on a pair of work boots and went out there and did physical work as our new labor secretary, but someone who knows firsthand what it's like to live on a meager unemployment check from week to week. And that is not a happy experience. I've done it on several occasions, but especially at this time during this pandemic, with so many people, you know, you've got millions and millions and millions of people out of work. You've got a labor secretary that knows what they're going through. And so from a compassion standpoint, he will be able to understand and appreciate what they're going through. He's also someone who appreciates the value of the dignity of work and this safe working conditions, you know, good health care and good pensions. So, you know, I think he'll be able to bring a great perspective on that. And I also think that, look, I've known Joe Biden for a long time. I've known Marty forever. He's worked on my campaigns for me when he was first starting out, and I've worked on his campaigns with him. You know, they're kindred spirits, Joe Biden, President Biden, and Marty Walsh. They believe in the same things. And I think it'll be a very easy transition for Marty Walsh, Secretary Walsh, to become Secretary of Labor. And just there'll be great harmony between the ideals and the beliefs of those two men. And I think Marty will be great as Labor Secretary and will be a passionate advocate on behalf of all workers all over this country. And like I say, completely in harmony with the ideas of President Biden and Vice President Harris. I think he'll be a great torchbearer and advocate on behalf of their ideas.
As we wrap this up, I do have two quick questions, knowing that you're a Boston area guy, knowing that we've had great mayors like Ray Flynn, Mayor Menino, and Marty Walsh. Are you going to be kind of watching with, you know, the race to see who becomes the next mayor of the city of Boston?
Yeah, so I've been fielding phone calls you know, there are a lot of people out there that think this might be a cast of thousands that are going to run for mayor. It right now, because it's still a very long, next September was supposed to be the election, so the primary. So it's a long way off. So we're not quite sure whether there'll be a special election. That's a long time to go with an acting mayor. I know that Mayor Menino took over in July, and then they had the election in September. So they just went with the regular election. But in this one, you've got almost 10 months, before you'll have a new mayor. And that's a bit long time to wait. So we'll have to see if they have a special election or if they wait to have an acting mayor for that long period of time. I kind of doubt the latter. But I think we'll have, upwards of 20 candidates if we have a special election for mayor. So it'll be great to watch, and it'll be interesting to see who gets in.
Anything you want to say in closing? Anything we haven't touched upon, or just a way to say something to your constituents while we have you for the last couple of moments?
Yeah, I would. First of all, I want to say thank you to all. Look, we had an election back in November in the middle of a pandemic, and we had a record turnout. And I'm including voting from your kitchen or your living room as turnout. But there were a lot of people a lot of those talking heads were saying, oh, there'll be a low turnout. It's the middle of a pandemic. People are afraid. We had a record turnout in our district, in the 8th Congressional District. So in every single town in my district, every single city, we had record turnout. And that's unbelievable. I just want to congratulate the people of my district for stepping up as good citizens. And I actually thought myself, I said, well, the people who usually vote are going to vote by mail in. That's basically it, and it'll be the same. In some towns, we had triple what we normally saw in elections. So I'm greatly encouraged and greatly honored that I was elected by such a huge margin in both the primary and in the final. So, and even in these tough times, the institution that I served in was attacked last week on Wednesday, the 6th. And, even in the midst of that, I am just so proud and happy to serve, because I work for the almost 800,000 people that I represent, and I'm blessed. I've got common sense people that I represent. I've got good Americans that I represent. I've got people that support the Constitution and the principles that this country was founded on individual rights and freedoms and respect for the Constitution and the rule of law. And, my district is just a shining example of what's best about America. And, I think especially with the events of Wednesday, it just makes me that much prouder that I have the opportunity to represent the families of the 8th Congressional District in Massachusetts in the United States Congress. So I am very thankful, and I wish a very happy new year and a healthy new year to everybody in my district and to you, Kevin, going forward. So thank you.
Congressman, I thank you for taking time out, and your staff for always paying attention to any need of the media here on the South Shore or in the Boston area. It's definitely appreciated. Again, we've been privileged to speak with Congressman Stephen Lynch, who has been our guest. Thank you, Congressman.
Thank you, Kevin. Have a good day. Stay safe now.
We will now step aside, closing out hour number one. When we come back, hour number two here at 95.9 WATD.
WATD FM Marshfield, WBMS Brockton. This is the South Shore's radio station, 95.9 FM WATD. Streaming online at 95.9WATD.com. And with your smart speaker, just by saying play WATD.
Greetings. This is Laura from the Plymouth County Suicide Prevention Coalition. The mission of our organization continues to promote suicide prevention, intervention, and awareness in our communities, our schools, and throughout the county. You can help by giving of your time, or you can make a donation. To learn more, please visit our website at plymouthcountyspc.org.
This is Joanne Buchanan from South Shore Folk Music Club at First Parish Duxbury, inviting you to join us on Thursday, January 21st at 7 p.m. for our live Zoom open mic series. Join us for live music, poetry, applause, and good company. Please visit our website at SouthShoreFolkMusicClub.org for further information about our live Zoom open mic and for the Zoom link.
Download the Monday Night Talk podcast from iTunes for free. Just search for Monday Night Talk WATD. We now return to Kevin Tachi and Monday Night Talk.
Okay, we are back for hour number two. And joining us for this segment, this one is more towards the Council on Aging. I like to make sure that I check in on a regular basis with the folks who provide services and work with our older adults, myself. I know I'm slowly easing into senior status, and it's been a tough year when it comes to having to deal with a pandemic. So I can only imagine what it's like for folks who are over a certain age, who are retired, and who like to go to their local Council on Aging's or seek elder services, and knowing that there's been a limitation because of COVID-19. Joining us to talk about it first is Tammy Murray. Tammy is a kind of a staple on this program. She kind of actually has kind of a co-host status from time to time when she joins me, because she's so well-rounded and well-versed in a lot of different areas. She is the Director of Community and Elder Services. Tammy, welcome back to the program.
Thanks so much for having me.
And also joining us is Susan Curtin. She is the Director of the Council on Aging in Norwell. I think you have done prior stints on this program as well, correct?
Yes, absolutely. Thanks for having me back.
Yeah, welcome back. And again, it's I like to have these collective conversations, because I believe that your Council on Aging's in and around the South Shore. You hold regular meetings with other COAs just to see where things are, share ideas. Is that correct?
Yes. Yeah, we have a group. We started out as what we call the neighborhood group. It was about five senior centers back when COVID first started, and it's expanded. We have up to 20 centers on the South Shore that we invite to participate. Now, not everyone is able to do so, but it gives us a great opportunity to kind of check in, see where we're all at, share our best practices, kind of go through our challenges with one another. So it's been, I think, you know, of all the things that have happened during COVID, this has probably been one of the great outcomes for us.
I would ask you, Tammy, what has it been like, just a brief year in review, you know, being somebody who oversees elder services, and you also have a community portion to your job title as well, so it's a little bit more expanded. What has it been like dealing with COVID-19 for the past year?
For as difficult as it's been for people who are used to coming to the building, I really, actually, it was almost like a mission accomplished in a certain sense, where since I became a director of Councils on Aging, I'd focused a lot on the services that we offer in addition to the activities that we offer. So it was really kind of amazing to watch that transition happen. We have a lot more of the members that we're reaching on Zoom or by telephone. So it's more one-on-one than if you're sitting at a desk and you just wave hi to 20 people coming in to do exercise classes. So as bad as it's been, and for as worried a lot of us are about the isolation piece, there's also been some really good things that have come of it. I think it's strengthened a lot of relationships. And I know in my case for Hanover, all five of my departments have finally come together to be like one cohesive department, and we work really well with the others. So I think there's been a lot of camaraderie. And like Susan said, those weekly calls that she started, they're amazing, because then if I could call someone in Braintree if I have a question, or, you know, so it broadened from me and Susan talking a lot to us talking to the whole area.
How about you, Susan? What has it been like in a year in review to being the head of your COA and deal with dealing with things differently than you normally did prior to the middle of March of 2020?
So it's definitely been, there have been a lot of challenges, but it's been a great learning experience for us as well. I think similar to what Tammy has seen, is we've had an opportunity to connect with people that we might otherwise not have had the chance to connect with. So we did a lot of outreach with phone calls. We did some letter writing. We've had a lot of other one-on-one activities that are bringing people into the center, grab and go type of activities that are bringing people by that we have not seen at our center previously. So I think that's been a great outcome from it. The community support in and of itself has been like nothing I have ever seen. The sheer number of people who have offered to volunteer, from the smallest thing of donating a gift card to delivering meals and everything in between, the outpouring of support has been incredible. And it's really brought us together as a community. And I think it's also given us a chance to let people know in the community more about what Councils on Aging actually do. We're not just a club where people come and play bingo or things like that, but to really highlight all of the services that we offer and provide to folks in the community. So it's there have been some really great things that have come out of it.
I think that we're seeing a light at the end of the tunnel. I think a lot of us, and not just because of the calendar change, because, you know, how many of us did we see on social media going, thank God 2020 is gone and everything's going to be, you know, there's this sense of hope, you know, on January 1. But unfortunately, we still have the same problems that we're dealing with as a culture. But I think the one bright shining light is that there have been proven vaccines that are being distributed. Where does the older population, where do the older adults fall in the importance of getting these shots and knowing that some of these vaccines come in two doses? Tammy?
So I think there's been a lot of information shared and not a lot of specifics about information, and I don't have total specifics, but I can touch on certain things. The state did enter a contract with, I know, CVS and Walgreens. They're also entering contracts in municipalities right now to distribute vaccines. When those vaccines come has not been determined yet. Next week is first responder week. So all of the first responders in our area will be receiving vaccines with the first shot. Some will be doing it in a regionalization. I believe Duxbury was heading up that regionalization, and some may get the vaccines in their own community for their Department of Health to distribute. Once that happens, it's time to sort of sit back and figure out, okay, we did this, how many thousand people, what's it going to look like to do older adults, people who work in the school department and things like that. I believe they have put people over 75 in a higher bracket, so they'll get it first and then go down. However, there's always questions, whereas I know one of the housing sites here is actually contracting CVS to go out to the site, where our community has been approved to distribute and we may be going to other housing sites, or they have to all go to one site. So as much as everybody's looking forward to this and we really want to get, you know, the boots on the ground and get everybody vaccinated, there's a lot of intricate details. I did get something from CVS today stating that they're going to be doing it on a broad scale and you just have to make an appointment. So I'm guessing they're probably in the later part of phase two, but I could be totally wrong. Everything they do lately is in phases, and it's really hard to keep track of the numbers and the subletters. But I can say that every town's health department is in charge of these vaccines. I am sure there will be information in the newspaper, online, on the radio, probably robocalls being done. I know specifically I'm going to do robocalls for my list here at the Council on Aging. And then that'll be when the details come out. But it's kind of sad that they've given out information without dates and times, because we've received a lot of calls of people wanting to know when and where and how. And all I know about the how is that people are going to have to register online if they get it done through the state or a municipality. And that could cause an issue for some people, too. So Councils on Aging, I think, should be preparing themselves to be able to assist people to sign up for vaccines.
What are your thoughts, Susan, on this in regards to vaccines and the distribution, especially for older adults?
So I'll, you know, echo a lot of Tammy's sentiment. There's been information come out, but not a lot of detail for us. We have received a lot of phone calls from people in the community looking for information about when and where, and I mean, if they are eligible. And so, you know, in conversations with our Board of Health, as more information becomes available, we'll be able to disseminate that as far as if we will have vaccine clinics in the community. We don't know yet. We're still waiting to hear. So a lot of times we're also asking people to go back and talk to their physician, because their physician will know whether or not it's something that they should be pursuing anyways, and what will be the most appropriate course of action for them. So we're kind of in a wait and see pattern right now until we have more information from the Board of Health as far as the timelines for everything.
Again, if you are just tuning in, you are tuned into Monday Night Talk here at 95.9 WAPD, and we're speaking with Tammy Murray. She's the Director of Community and Elder Services, and Susan Curtin, who is the Director of Council and Aging in the great town of Norwell. And we're talking about what their respective centers are doing during COVID, and also talking a little bit about maybe the future of getting back to being able to walk up to somebody and give them a handshake or a hug, you know, cool stuff like that. What has it been? What has it been like having to kind of do two steps? Tammy, you had mentioned about, you know, who knows what phase we're in. You know, it's like we're doing a two step because we got up to phase three, step three, and then all of a sudden we're, you know, tap dancing back to, you know, phase two, step two. I mean, what has it been like for the folks that you provide services for and assistance to?
In Hanover specifically, they were very slow to move forward because, of course, we're doing the COVID testing here in my parking lot. Yep. So they've been very involved and very restrictive. So the stepping back wasn't as harsh as it has been for other places that I know. Many towns were open and they were allowing people to come in, a limited number for exercise classes and things like that. And they had to then again shut their doors. So I know it was difficult. I think by this time, we're all just, I don't know, doing what we have to do and trying to adjust and do it as kindly as possible. I know Susan's been doing a lot with grab and goes and lunches and things like that, and it probably affected you more to have to step back a little.
Susan?
Yeah, so we actually opened our center to the public in August, and we were able to run programming in a very limited capacity until the week after Thanksgiving. We closed just a precautionary measure, and then we came back for a week, and then we were closed pretty much since then. But yeah, so what we've been doing is a lot of grab and go events. Our people were thrilled to be able to come back into the building, even if it was in a very downscaled. We went from 20 people in an exercise class to 6 people, but it was great for those people to be able to come into the building. So when we had to pull back the reins and kind of shut things down again, I think that was challenging for people because they were really just grateful to be able to get out of the house and see people, even in a limited capacity. But we've been doing a number of grab and go events actually through the month of December. I think 3 of the 4 weeks of December, we had a grab and go every day. We did a 12 days of Christmas event, which was a lot of fun. And the thing that was really nice about that is it gave people purpose. It gave them even just a short opportunity to get out of the house and have that connection with people. And it was good for us because it gave us a chance to kind of check in and see where people were at, even if it was just a 5-minute conversation. So pulling back has been a little bit difficult, I think, in some respects, because people are just finally excited to be able to be out and seeing folks. But again, like you say, the light's at the end of the tunnel. And I think, you know, we'll be in grab and go mode for a little bit. And hopefully by March, we'll be able to have people back in the building. Well, it's wait and see at this point.
With the grab and goes, is that something that that is funded through the state or federal government, or is that something that is budgeted through your own town budgets?
So it's been a combination. It's been a combination of CARES Act funding, yep, which we were fortunate to have access to, but also we've been able to fund some of it through our friends group. Some of it was funded through our budget and some of it was funded through donations. And as I mentioned earlier, we were very fortunate because the community has been so supportive, and that part of that was donations coming into us in a number of ways. And so those donations actually helped us to be able to do some of the grab and go programs that we've done as well. It's been wonderful. It really has.
Tammy, how important are donations to Council on Aging's or any elder services that are provided?
It's really important. I echo Susan on how we funded our grab and goes and actually our Farms to Family program that we had done for a while, which we're trying to get again. But it's super important. There were businesses and outside sales companies and all these things that used to provide like Christmas gifts to seniors and gift cards and all of that. And this year, because, you know, the mall's gone or they couldn't put a tree up somewhere to get donations, those things did not happen. So we relied a lot on our friends group who actually... they did a raffle of 200 gift cards and provided those to people in our town. And then our Nurse Association also provided us with gift cards. And the American Legion provided veterans with gift cards. All of that matters so much. We had a gentleman come in after Halloween with pounds and pounds of candy that we were able to stick in bags as people picked them up or dropped them off. So it's all really important. Our friends group is a fresh, different group. I think they even have two more members. So they're getting ready to reestablish and start going out there and trying to raise as much as they can so that we don't have to expend all of our budget on it, especially now where the CARES Act isn't available.
Yeah, and if you are just tuning in, we are speaking with Tammy Murray and Susan Curtin, talking a little bit about what our local Council on Aging's do, the elder services that are provided. Do you from time to time feel that maybe you're not receiving the donations you're accustomed to because there is an assumption that maybe your centers aren't open, Tammy?
Yeah, we've tried really hard as a group to try and let people know exactly what we do and how hard we've been working since March 13th when the world shut down. But a lot of times it's difficult because they don't know where to find the information or... You know, you could put it on Facebook or the radio or whatever, but people are busy as well. So I think we've seen a little bit of a decrease due to that. We have gotten lots of calls about volunteers that want to come in and help. But then at that point, it's like, okay, right now we're kind of in a lull. So what do we have you do? People have still been gracious, but I do believe that because they think we're not open or we're not doing a lot of things that we don't have the needs that we still have.
Any message that you want to put out, Susan, in regards to, you know, that you are open, you are functioning, but you're doing so under a limited amount of hours and staff?
Well, we're actually we're staffed in the building Monday through Friday. So we're there our regular business hours and by appointment if people need us and by phone, obviously. And we do Zoom as necessary, too. I think folks, for the most part, hopefully know that we're there and we have been here. We've been fully staffed since June, which is really nice. We're here for the programming. Our newsletter just went out. We have so many things coming up, but it's also fuel assistance time. So people who are looking to file for fuel assistance, people are still struggling. And when we're talking about older adults, we're talking 60 and older, and a lot of 60 into 70s are still working. And for those people, especially who may have been self-employed or are seeing some, or that maybe they've been furloughed or whatever, we want them to know there are other services. So if you qualify for SNAP benefits, fuel assistance, other types of support services, we're here to help you with that as well. And we've definitely seen an increase in those types of things. The other thing that we're seeing is folks who are maybe 65 or approaching, you know, maybe a little bit older, COVID has really had people take a step back and assess where they are from a retirement perspective. And we're seeing a lot of folks who are deciding to retire at this point. So Medicare is coming into play and SHINE counseling and how do I pick my health insurance for when I prepare to retire? So we're seeing a lot more activity in those areas as well. So we're here. I hope people know we're here, but if they don't, hopefully today will help them understand a little bit better more about what we're able to offer to them outside of programmed things.
Not that I want to interject this into our conversation, but knowing that there is going to be a new administration in office in less than 2 weeks down in Washington, D.C., how does that help your organizations? Does that help what you're able to provide to the older adults in your community? in the future. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I think it's hard to say, actually. I think it's really hard to say. Okay. I would like to think that it would. Susan, what do you think on that?
I think it's still too soon to tell. We'll, it's hard to know what types of programs they'll want to put in place or how they'll want to change the existing programs that help support older adults. I think it's still too soon to tell.
Okay. The other thing I would ask is, with COVID-19 and knowing that there is a possibility that we could see us return to normal life, will that make it easy if you'd be able to plan certain programs and events or activities, or is it too soon to say? Susan?
I think what has happened is COVID has really made us think out of the box, if you will. It's forced our hand to take a look at how we provide programming on site and virtually. And we've been doing some virtual programming for a number of years now anyways, but it certainly has made us step up our game. I think it will help us to prepare in some ways, yes. But I think what also has happened is it's helped us to figure out that we don't have to rely solely on programming in person, that we can still continue to take advantage of using cable TV, and we're using it more than ever, to reach those people who are homebound and that would not have an opportunity to walk in through our doors, even if it was, you know, a non-COVID environment. We also are trying to put out an iPad loaner program. We've purchased some iPads and we're working towards that to help people who don't have access to technology so that we can continue to use Zoom, again, for people who maybe aren't interested in coming out or can't get out for one reason or another. So I think it will help us to plan, but we'll be planning differently no matter what. Yeah, it's exciting, actually. I think it's exciting to know that we have all kinds of options available to us and we're not limited to just having the doors of the center open for people to walk through.
Mm-hmm. Annie?
Yeah, I would agree with that. I was thinking of that actually today. We had come up with a policy and protocols for if we had opened a month ago. And now those will hopefully be able to be lessened to a degree, but then you don't also want to overpack the place. Mm-hmm. But I think it did also open up, like Susan said, the opportunity to do things virtually or to use other spaces in town. Like we have beautiful parks that we could do the walking group there, or, you know, it broadened, I think, everybody's mindset on what we really have available to us to use for these kinds of programs and what the kinds of programs the people really want are.
Well, again, I feel the Council on Aging's, elder services that are provided, I feel your centers are so creative, honestly. Example, you know, prior to us coming into the conversation, Tammy talking about, you know, being able to do painting via Zoom, right?
Oh, I should hold that up.
Yeah. Well, unfortunately, the folks who are listening on the radio can't see that. But I know that you know how to just do it. But you can kind of give us a little bit of an insight into the program and how it has taken off.
Yep. So what we're doing is we found a local painter who usually did paint parties and obviously can't now because of COVID. She has recorded on Zoom, which we will also air on cable, her painting. The money from our budget has been paid to her, so people in the community can call us up, drive by, pick up a bag that has the brushes, the canvas, the paints, and everything. We either provide them with the link or let them know when it's going to be on cable and they can paint at home. And it's really taken off. We also had the local flower group give us amaryllis to plant for the Christmas season or the holiday season. So that was through Parks and Rec, and people came by and picked up their kit and went home and followed the directions to plant things. So we've done a lot of that kind of stuff, or we've done birdhouses where the instructions are in it. But I think being able to see the person show you how to do it brings so much. I mean, I think the painting comes out better or whatever you're doing, but it really makes them feel like they're still there doing it with them. So it's been pretty cool.
We have just a few minutes left in our conversation, Tammy, Susan. I want to thank you for joining me. Anything that we haven't touched upon, but you want to take a moment to at least share a thought or two before we say goodbye, at least for the segment? Susan?
I think the one thing that I want people to really keep in mind is that there are people who are home, who have been home alone for a number of, almost a year now, you know, 10 months now, who may not have family close by, they may not have family at all, and that are really truly isolated. So we are trying to encourage people to make sure that you're checking in on your neighbors who live alone. And it doesn't always have to be a senior, by the way, either, but to check in on your neighbors and from a safe distance, obviously, and just make sure that they're okay and see if there's anything they need. And if they feel that there's a concern with a neighbor who is older that may they feel may need some support, that they can reach out to us. And we can certainly reach out to the you know older adult in the community or encourage their neighbor to reach out to us as well. So I think this is a time where we really need to come together as a community. And I know we have and we've been trying to encourage people all along just to check on one another, make sure everybody's doing okay.
Tammy?
Yeah, I would follow that sentiment and just add that it could be people of all ages. If you know of a family that's struggling with food or anything, we can usually, if we can't help, can find a resource that can help. So it's more than just services for the adult older adult population. It's really services for almost anybody we can refer.
Well, continued success to both of you and your colleagues in and around the South Shore and the Commonwealth for the services that you provide to the older adults, the vulnerable population. Especially during this pandemic, folks don't realize the work that you do. And so it's a privilege for me to be able to have you do a segment like this to share just a little bit of a thumbnail as to what you do. So I thank both of you.
Thank you, Kevin, for having us. It's always fun.
Thank you, Kevin. It's been great.
Tammy, I know we didn't get a chance to talk music, but that's a future segment that we will attempt to do.
I know. I almost threw in the talking heads at one point, but I didn't. Next time.
Yeah. Or ELO or something like that. All right. Well, I thank both of you. I will we'll be in touch and have you back on soon. And I thank those who are tuned in. We're going to step aside just for a moment. When we come back, more Monday Night Talk right here on 95.9. WAPD. Don't go anywhere.
The success of Janet's meal prep business is keeping her from keeping up with customer appetites.
Paleo Prep Meals, this is Janet. Yep, you just reheat. But we actually have a wait list currently. Oh, can you hold on one sec?
She needs to hire.
I need Indeed.
Indeed you do. The moment you sponsor a job on Indeed, you get a short list of quality candidates from our resume database. Indeed delivers 2.5 times more hires than the other branded job sites combined, according to Breezy HR 2019. Visit Indeed.com/credit and get a $75 credit for your first job post. Terms and conditions apply.
Newsmax TV is the biggest thing on cable news, with shows including Dick Morris, Rudy Giuliani, Michelle Malkin, Diamond and Silk, Mike Huckabee, Alan Dershowitz, and more. Every night, watch Newsmax's number one show, Greg Kelly Reports. Greg Kelly tells you the truth about Trump. Newsmax is on all major cable systems. Check your guide or tell your operator you want Newsmax. 30 million Americans watch Newsmax TV. And download the Newsmax app on your smartphone. It's free, so get Newsmax TV anytime, anywhere.
Greetings. This is Laura from the Plymouth County Suicide Prevention Coalition. The mission of our organization continues to promote suicide prevention, intervention, and awareness in our communities, our schools, and throughout the county. You can help by giving of your time, or you can make a donation. To learn more, please visit our website at plymouthcountyspc.org.
The People's Truth, a show dedicated to bringing communities together and keeping the truth alive. Join your host, me, Benny Rabbi, as we talk with businesses, organizations, and people around New England and the world in search of the People's Truth. Join us tonight at 9 p.m. on 95.9 WATD.
This is Monday Night Talk with your host, Kevin Tachi.
Joining us for this segment is Paula Harris. Paula is someone who specializes in finances, and investment. She is with WH Cornerstone Investment. Paula, welcome to the program.
Kevin, I'm thrilled to be back on such an exciting night here on Monday Night Talk. Love coming to talk to you.
You know, I feel there's such value in speaking with somebody when it comes to our finances. And you don't know that you're in trouble until you need a dollar, whether it's an emergency, whether you need to replace a hot water heater in your home, or you need work done to your automobile, and then you go to check your bank, or what do I have for credit? And you're like, oh no. Talk to me about the importance of financial preparedness.
Oh my gosh, Kevin, financial preparedness is everything. As you may know, we do specialize in working with widows, and the average age of widowhood is 59. And unfortunately, so many people get caught by what we call this curveball. A curveball hits your life, you weren't expecting it, and you've got to react. So you can have something as tragic as a death of a spouse. You could have, I mean, a tragedy of losing your job. I think this past year, the pandemic really caught a lot of people by surprise, and being prepared is huge. And so I think today, helping people get some tips around being prepared is, I think, going to be really important.
Would you say probably the foundation of financial preparedness is one's mindset?
I absolutely think that, yes. Having a mindset of, I'm taking 100% responsibility for my actions, decisions, my beliefs, and my mindset, and making sure that you're not spending time blaming somebody else. Spending time blaming the government, the weather, the politicians, the pandemic. You know, you ultimately are responsible for the decisions that you make. So if you hadn't saved, well, you've probably made some choices. Sometimes there are people in situations where, they just literally are not able to save. But sometimes we maybe went out to dinner 5 nights a week, and we shopped at Amazon, 7 days a week. Those were decisions. And if you got caught not having enough money, you got to look and say, okay, could I have saved somewhere else? So absolutely, mindset's a big part of it.
Where does one start? I mean, is it too late to start if you are in debt, or can you start at any time?
You can start at any time. And it's interesting you say about being in debt. So one of the guys I went to high school with, he posted a picture last week of his daughter who had made the decision she was going to pay off her student loans. $54,000 worth of loans. She was going to commit to paying them off in 6 months. And she had one of those little letter boards, and she had it on there, and she had done it. Now we're talking, I don't know what she makes for money. I don't know her whole story, but she set a goal. That was it, what they call a BHAG, a big, hairy, audacious goal. And when you set something like that, a big, scary goal, you start to align everything. You start making decisions. You suddenly go, do I want to go out to eat? Or you know what? I can cook at home and I'm going to save that money. You can, at any point in your life, it's never too late. And the other thing is, Kevin, it's never too early. We have worked with a lot of our clients to help their kids start to save. Actually, one of the high school students right now, we just set him up with his own Roth IRA, a great tool. Especially for younger people, to start putting money in. The taxes have already been paid on the money. You put it in, it's going to grow tax deferred, and it's going to come out tax free. You do that for a 17-year-old, 20-year-old, that money's going to grow for 40 to 50 years before they need it in retirement. The power of compounding on that is just mind blowing. And then there are some ways that you could use it if they really needed to for education. But you're never too early. And you're never too late. Sometimes people, they say, I'm too young, or they'll say, I'm too old. Never the case.
I remember years ago when I was talking with someone about finances and what I should do. Should I put money in a savings account compared to maybe putting it on a mutual fund? And I was taught at that time, or shown, the rule of 72.
Yep.
Is a rule of 72 something that's still applicable to this day?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Your money will double every 7 years. So you, I will say these days in a bank account, it's probably not going to double. It's going to double in the stock market. The bank accounts, you know, one of the benefits of having really low mortgage rates, people can access houses, but the downfall of that is your savings and your CD rates and your money markets are next to nil, and inflation's going to eat away at your money. So you need to keep some, like we talk about an emergency fund. You really want to have 3 to 6 months of money in the bank in an emergency fund. That's really, really, really important. And people always want to invest that money. That money should not be invested, because if you have an emergency, you need that money now, and you can't take a risk of the market being down like we saw in March. However, your rest of your savings, you really should be thinking about putting it into mutual funds, exchange traded funds, individual equities. You want to put it into the market so that it works for you. The growth rates are so much better.
And people need to realize that this is it's not a sprint when it comes to investing in a money market. It's a marathon.
Right. Well, yeah, and into the market, the stock market. And the others, it's not a sprint. It is not, it is not something you should be gambling about. You know, taking hot stock tips that you heard from a neighbor or a friend or a brother, whatever, that is not smart investing. That is a form of I'll say, gambling. There's oftentimes those will pay off, but it's just like someone who goes to Vegas or any casino. They tell you about the wins. They don't remember to tell you about the losses. We as human beings tend to remember our wins sometimes more than we remember our losses. So I think you have to be very disciplined. Some of the things I think 2020 taught us is you take emotion out of investing. You set up a plan. You talk about doing something called pay yourself first. So you want to take money out of your paycheck. You put it right into that brokerage account or into that IRA or to that 401k. You take it off the top. You put it in and you do it consistently month after month, paycheck after paycheck. And you just keep doing that. And when the markets, hiccup, we saw a big drop of what they call a V recovery. Most people or many people that pulled out because they're based on emotion and fear, missed the return. They got was a downturn. They didn't get the upside. So you have to take emotion out of investing, and you have to go for the long view. Again, if you were going to say, let's say you got a kid going off to college, you're a year or two out. You probably don't want that money invested in the stock market anymore. You want it to be in something very safe. You're getting ready to retire. You might want to be thinking about keeping a year of expected income out of the market so that you have money and you don't have to dip in to sell anything. Otherwise, the market set it. Check it every once in a while, but do not get caught in the news and the noise of the day, and be strong and be unemotional about it.
And we're speaking with Paula Harris with WH Cornerstone Investment. I want to go back to you talking about the emergency fund.
Yes.
Is there a certain amount that should be in an emergency fund, and how often should one pay into said emergency fund?
So, we talk about 3 to 6 months of living expenses. So if you have, a job that's harder to get another one, you're going to want that 6 months, or you have, a lot of overhead. You got a mortgage, you've got a bunch of kids, you've got a lot of expenses. You want that 6 months. You're single, you could move back in with mom and dad. The 3 months might be okay. It might be okay, but ideally it's 6 months. It's something you want to keep funding till you get it. You could do that. Some people can do that in one check. They have enough savings and they can do it. Others, maybe it's you put $100 a week, you put $500 a paycheck. You want to keep that building up and then put it in like a money market at the bank or the credit union.
Talk to me about the importance of saving versus spending. How important is it to keep an eye on your activity financially?
It's a big deal. So, I'll reframe it a little bit. It's about cash flow. So we have seen people who are, making $350,000 a year, and they don't know where they're going to be able. If they miss a paycheck, they're in a house of cards. We've seen people making $70,000 a year and have a big savings account. So it's all about how you manage your cash flow. So making sure that you are properly saving for the future is key. It's living below your means. We live in a society today that wants us to, you know, to consume, to spend. You know, luckily we don't have as many billboards as some other states. But you know, you drive into Boston, the number of billboards you see, it's to buy something. It's a way for you to part from your money. I think about like in Braintree, you would see casino ads on these billboards. You as a consumer have to like defend your pocketbook and your decisions and say, savings is more important than spending. I don't need to worry about what the Joneses are doing and keeping up with my neighbors. I need to provide for myself, my family, and make sure that my financial future is going to be as rock solid as possible. And it's hard because we want to live for today. These past few months have been challenging. I get caught up in it too. Like I want to soothe myself because I haven't been able to do as many things. So I might buy something extra or spend a little more on a bottle of wine. Or, you know, you have to become really diligent about where your money is going and keeping your expenses below your income. That's the secret to building wealth. You know, you spend less than what you earn. People, you know, it's like dieting, put less food in your mouth, you know, and move more, but we make it hard on ourselves. So I would say, yeah, cash flow is king. Absolutely.
With today's technology, the one thing that we have that we can use at our disposal is automating. How important is automating?
Automating is everything. So we just started a new year. What you'll often find in a new year is people got a pay increase. So great time to think about if you're contributing to a 401k or an IRA, maybe you up that 1%. So first of all, if you got to be participating, if you're offered a 401k, 403b at work, you got to participate. At least you participate to the match. For those people who don't get a match, you need to participate anyway. You are saving on your taxes, a big deal. For those people who don't have access to a 401k or a 403b, you want to be using an IRA. And there's a regular traditional IRA or there's the Roth IRA. The traditional, you're putting money in tax deferred. It grows tax free and it comes out, it gets taxed. The Roth, money goes in after it's been taxed, grows tax-free, comes out tax-free. So not everyone is able to contribute to a Roth because you can get capped on it. So one of the things you want to do if you also is find a way through the payroll company, whether your paycheck goes into your savings or checking account, you know, set up either another savings or account where the money gets put over. You might say 10% immediately goes into funding into a savings account or to a brokerage account. You gotta pay yourself first. And automating is the only way. I actually had a gentleman call me the other day. He's trying to pay off his college loans. He was about 27. I said, well, why are you reaching out to a financial planner at this point? And he said, because I am not being disciplined about consistently paying those loans and I need the accountability to make sure that happens. You know, it's a pretty simple process. You just keep it automated, like my mortgage. I pay an extra amount every time it's automated. It goes right off every month as opposed to me having to think about it. Because as humans, if we have to think about something, it goes back to that mindset, Kevin. We will find ways to justify why we don't need to do it, why we shouldn't do it, why this is more important. So that paying yourself first, automating, it's the secret to building wealth.
I'm going to offer my own insight on as far as an IRA. My accountant a few years ago suggested that I would gain a savings in my taxes by having an IRA. So I enlisted, he signed me up for a company.
Yep.
They take money out of my paychecks every week. The problem is that it's just money going in there and I haven't done anything with it. Am I a lost cause or is there something that I can do to put this going in the right direction? Diversifying, do I trust the organization that he signed me up with and talk to me about fees
yep.
that are incurred if they in fact are somebody who are helping to put my monies into different mutual funds.
So first of all, congratulations. You followed the advice of your accountant and you put money away. So not a lot, you know, if you didn't choose that, then I'd say maybe you're a lost cause, but there'd be still time to change things. But no, the fact that you're putting money away, fantastic. Absolutely great. You want to keep doing that. So now you've got a pool of money, you got something to work with. So, you know, most of these brokerage houses these days, most of them are, I'll say, discount brokerage. If you're doing something like a Vanguard, a Schwab, a Fidelity, their trading fees have come down or are non-existent almost. So don't have to worry so much about the fees, but where you do have to be concerned is looking at the underlying expense ratios. You know, a lot of times we'll talk about using exchange traded funds because they have so low expenses in the product themselves. You could have a mutual fund that could charge you 1 or 2%. That's money that's not working for you. You know, we try to avoid those types of mutual funds because then, you know, the consumer's not getting the full benefit of it. So one of the easy things to do is to put money into what they call a target date fund. So, you know, you figure out your age and you figure out, you know, how many years to retirement. You know, most of us now, it's 66 or 67 is the Social Security retirement age. So you say, okay, for 67, all right, what's the closest date? They usually do them, you know, at the O's or the fives. So it'd be 2030, 2035, 2040. And you pick that one. That would be very diversified. That is being professionally managed. And it will, as you get closer to retirement, will take back the risk factor and we'll get into more conservative things. That's a one very easy way to do it. And I'll say a company like Vanguard, they have great products on their own, feeling confident. They've always been, John Bogle was an incredible influence on the financial industry and created a very low cost, very consumer friendly company. And you can feel good about their products, but you always do look at those expenses, look at the fee to go in. Most people don't spend enough time looking at that, but that's a easy way to do it. And then there's other easy ways as well that, you know, some of that gets a little bit more customized by what the person's doing and their comfort level. So I'll probably just leave it at that.
Little housekeeping here when we talk financial preparedness.
Yes.
The information that we provide, how often should we be checking to making sure that any information that we've provided, whether it's for credit cards, whether it's for banking, whatever it is, that all the information is 100% correct?
I think you are well served probably, let's say, once a quarter to look. You know, as you said, using yourself as an example, I'll use myself as an example. I got an email this morning from the brokerage house that said, money just moved out of your account. And I went, what? Like, I don't remember that. Well, we had actually set up a donor advised fund and that transfer had happened. So when I went in to confirm it, I was looking at my addresses. Well, you know, Kevin, I think I'm on top of things, but now statements all come electronically. I looked and I had moved about 4 years ago. My legal address was my correct one, but my mailing address was still my old one. I didn't figure that out because they're not sending me any mail. So that was a big thing. I was like, okay, even I'm in the industry and I got to keep remembering to check these things. So it's important to check. I did a women's financial challenge last month. It was a 5-day challenge. We tackled some small things every day. And one woman, she had shared with us that she had left her company. She had been there a long time. Her 401k had technically, you know, it had ended and she never took the time to roll it over. Somebody changed her address on that 401k and stole it, drained the account. She was no longer getting statements, didn't realize it, and she lost her whole entire account. She's had to deal with the feds because they tampered with the mail, so it's a federal offense, and she is, you know, having a huge amount of issues. So checking these things frequently is huge. I recommend to people, check your pay stub. I had a personal situation like 25 years ago where I was putting $200 away. They only put $20 into the account. I caught it because I looked. We've had clients come in and say, yeah, I contribute to my 401k. All right, we're going to look at your pay stub. No, you haven't been contributing, but you thought you were. So verifying these things is important. you know, every once in a while, pull your credit report. Look, you know, you can get free credit reports from the big three, TransUnion, and I'm blanking on the other names. Pull them. Look,
Equifax,
thank you. Look and see. I'll tell you, I have Equifax. They don't update them all the time. I look and I go back and say, because I had a breach. Someone, I think in Massachusetts unemployment, there was a lot of breaches that happened in May. A lot of people were hit by that. And so I put Equifax on a monthly basis on my account to look, but they don't update their numbers all the time. So as a consumer, you got to be vigilant. You got to go look and verify. Big deal. It's a big deal.
Yeah, and if you're just tuning in, we're speaking with Paula Harris, and she's giving us some advice and tips in regards to financial preparedness. She'll be with us just for a few more moments as we're getting ready to wrap up this segment. It's interesting that you talked about the credit apps, knowing that we see so many data breaches that, you know, that are in mass quantity, you know, whether you have TJX having an issue or this particular company having a problem. How often should you be checking your credit score and your credit apps and checking for any issues with your credit?
Yeah, I think it's probably a good time to check it, you know, a couple times a year. So, you know, key times that I usually suggest people check things, and this is also checking your beneficiaries on your accounts, big deal, on your investment accounts. You want to make sure that you've got named beneficiaries, people that are still in your life, people that are still alive. So great triggers, January 1, new year, check them. Another great trigger, your birthday. Let's just take a look, make sure I'm in order. Tax time, another great time to look as well. You've got all your tax documents out, you know, take a look then. Another time, I still think, no matter, because we're so wired for those 12 years of school that we went to, back to school, great time to rethink these things. And my business partner and husband, Bill, he always likes to use the change your batteries, check your beneficiaries. So when we change the clocks, change your batteries, check your beneficiaries. When we do those two time changes a year, that's one of his triggers as well. So I think that's a big deal.
As we're starting to wind down and wrap up in a couple of moments here, anything that we haven't touched upon that you want to share with the audience, or anything that we have touched upon, reemphasize?
Absolutely. So a little bit more on the beneficiaries. So beneficiaries are great tool that each of us has. We'll name our primary beneficiaries and our contingent beneficiaries. So if something were to happen to us, money will flow easily. The other thing to think about is if you're in a relationship, like a marriage, you want to make sure you have accounts jointly owned. So, you know, you have bank accounts. We've seen situations where, you know, a paycheck is being deposited into a single account. That person passes away. The spouse no longer has access to getting that money in that account, and they have to go through probate because they never got their estate planning done. So you want to make sure your estate planning is done, that you can avoid probate. Probate during a pandemic, not a friendly thing to go through. Probably twice as long as you would normally see. So that's something to think about, is making sure your accounts are jointly owned. Another thing that can trip up, especially widows and potentially widowers as well, is credit cards. So Kevin, when we have, especially when we're married, we often, spouses will have credit cards in both their names. But so we think, oh yeah, I have a credit card and it's in my name. But credit card company only issues, there are very few that don't issue it this way, only issues to a single person. So you may be, you know, Kevin Tachi may be the actual owner, and you may have your spouse have a companion card. But if you pass away, that credit card you can't use it anymore, because that person's deceased. So what I've seen for a lot of women that, especially that have been stay at home, they don't have necessarily income in their name. And I've seen this for high net worth women, you know, that live on like $4 million houses. And people, you have to go apply for a credit card. And guess what? when you don't have income, you're going to get a limit of like $300, $500, which when you're accustomed to probably having a $25,000 limit, you can't buy anything. You know, you're going to have trouble making ends meet. So making sure you understand who owns the credit card, and if you can, get a credit card that you own, registered to your credit and your name, so that you don't get caught in such a situation like that. So that's, again, part of that being prepared.
And if folks want to find out more, if they want to ask any questions after, taking part in watching or listening to this particular segment, how can they find out more about you?
Sure. We've got a great website, which is located at whcornerstone.com. We've got a bunch of downloadables on there. Actually, my business partner just came out with a book that you can see on the homepage. We've got workbooks. Prepare if a curveball hits your life. One called Rebuild if the curveball hits your life. We've got how to decide on Medicare. We've got lots of different tools, and we've got a great newsletter too that people can sign up for that goes out on a monthly basis. Or you can follow on social media. We're on, we got a YouTube channel, we've got about 50 videos out there, Cornerstone Quick Clips. Follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and LinkedIn, all at WH Cornerstone.
Well, Paula, we want to thank you again for joining us for this segment and sharing this information.
My pleasure, Kevin. I really enjoyed it, and it's always wonderful to talk to you and get information to people that really can help change their lives. We just want people to be prepared because curveballs come. You know, the pandemic was a curveball, and we want people to be able to navigate that in the best possible way they can.